Today is November 25th, 2015, and this is episode number 334 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I am not John Keat. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
And speaking of John Keat, that means I have to change your business cards again, Brian.
Not to John Keat, but we have the real John Keat with us.
Hi, gents. How are you?
Doing good. And it's really awesome to have you here.
As our listeners can probably hear, he is not joining us in the TMO studios.
No, well, we're making him sit outside in the parking lot.
Yep, it's a remote recording.
I'm jealous. Someday I'll be worthy to step inside.
You say that.
And also, you haven't actually been inside the studio, so
you might not even want to. Yeah, it's a good point too. Right. So we're ridiculous. So what are we doing here? We're having John over because he wrote a piece called Apple Sucks. Wait, what did you call it? The new Mac Pro is a failure.
Yeah, it's a failure.
And that's new in quotation marks because, you know, it's 2 years old.
Yeah, it's more than 2 years old, isn't it? I think it
was announced 2.5 years ago, but, you know, 2 years and 5 months. It shipped 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's getting a little long in a tooth.
Yeah, when it shipped, it was 6 months old. That's not all I'm saying, but I am saying that.
That's actually a good point. By the time it started shipping, it was already 6 months old.
Yes. And I've been cranky about it. You and I have talked about this a lot, but have we actually discussed the Mac Pro on this show?
Not really.
TDO?
Yeah, I think that's where we've done most of our Mac Pro discussions is on Daily Observations, which led to yesterday's show where we talked about John's piece and now today's show, because there's so much to really go into. If we were going to have John on, we needed more than, say, 15 or 20 minutes.
All right. So let's tell our listeners a little bit about John. So, John, we're going to brag on you a little bit. John has had a column for us for many years called The Devil's Advocate. And he's turns out he's not a full-time writer. So it's a little on again, off again. But he is opinionated. And he is smart, and he knows how to fire off a good rant.
Yes, you do.
And the piece that you did for us for this week, John, why don't you actually make the case for us? Explain why you think that the new Mac Pro is a failure.
Well, you know, there's a bit of discord on the article, in the sense of who's it a failure for. And, you know, the piece talks about it being a failure for professionals and creative professionals alike. And that's an area that was, you know, was always the core for Apple. It was those fellows and gals that saved Apple's bacon when it was in the worst of its times in 1997. Steve Jobs, I think there's actually a really nice YouTube video on it, where he talked about that, you know, we're going to really focus on this group of users that hasn't abandoned the platform yet. I think education was still a strength back then.
And it's still a strength today. It's just been overshadowed. I mean, Apple's actually doing really well in education today.
I think that's right. And they leaned on those users to really bring them back from the brink. And I guess the overall big arc, because it's wordy and goes on all kinds of geeky details that if you guys are interested, we can get into. But the big arc of the story is, hey, you know, those people saved the company in some sense, and that those were the people that were the core. And they're really cool people. Consumers, they're not quite that cool. You know, in some sense, consumers are kind of the lemmings in the bad old Apple lemmings.
I would like to point out to our listeners that John is a guest. and is not necessarily speaking for us.
Yeah,
so go ahead, John. You were saying?
If you had a silhouette of consumers, standing in line at Best Buy buying stuff, you're not going to get the kind of response that you got with creative people dancing in silhouettes, and motivating people to follow them. And,
come on, hold on a second. The people dancing in silhouette were hired dancers.
Right.
They weren't like graphic artists who were, who were like moonlighting for an Apple commercial.
Which is not to say that creative pros can't dance.
Maybe a lot of them can't, but it's somewhat of an homage to the creative side, right? People in the arts, people that are doing some kind of artistic endeavor is something I think that Apple was very successful in promoting that. But that group of people were influencers. They were tastemakers of some sort. And to tell you how important they are, when Apple started leaning on them, and of course part of this is the brilliance of Apple and Steve Jobs and everyone that helped make that effort, but leaning on those people were able to convince the entire world to not abandon that platform in part, and it went from a company that was about to go down the drain to the most valuable company in the world. So we should
point out, by the way, John is actually joining us from Manhattan.
Yes, sorry for the sirens.
Brian, you ruined the line that I was about to drop out, which is, John, I'm sorry about the siren. I knew when we gave Sierra and Ainsley the recumbent bike, we shouldn't have let them put the siren on it.
Then listen. And we'll erase that, and we'll go with your line.
All right, sounds good.
I don't think I've ever heard you guys actually ever edit this show.
Huh, how about that?
Here's the funny thing. When we actually edit it, we don't. You won't notice it, but we always talk about it anyway.
That's awesome.
Long story. It's got to be right. Definitely right. Just go ahead, please. You're saying... Creative. So, you were saying something about how normal people suck and the creative people are better than them. And go.
Right. So your average consumer isn't necessarily as big an influence on others as I think some of those creative types. And forgetting about them, and as they start to kind of ebb away from the platform because they're literally forced. Well, literally is not the correct word. They're just forced to leave because they don't have the equipment that they might like. As those folks go away, it would be a shame if Apple ever needs that group of folks again, if they're not around. I guess they should consider alienating those that core group, that creative professional group, is more than just the sum of the money that they're spending, which at this point is relatively speaking negligible and probably not even noticeable to Apple.
Yeah, to Apple's bigger bottom line. Mm-hmm.
But with regard to how important they are at opinion making, I think it is something that they should consider still servicing. Not to mention, I think it goes very well with the image and the persona of the company. It still holds itself out as this beacon for creatives. They didn't really abandon the think different ethos as far as the marketing set. They don't just say, hey, lemmings, line up, give me your money, and we're going to charge you a premium for the privilege. Maybe that's what they might do in practice. But the image they put forward is still one that is trying to leverage those creative folks. And I think if they lose those creative folks, it'll be a mistake.
All right. Well, so then in what way is the Mac Pro a failure to those creative folks, in your opinion?
Well, so this gets into who is a professional and creative, right? Some folks kind of had really nice responses one way or the other, agreeing and disagreeing with me. And it kind of turned on what you consider to be a professional, right? Some people say, anyone that's even bothering to respond to this is clearly not a professional because they will be too busy working at Pixar, right? These little folks that are geeks and like to tweak on their boxes all day, that you can't consider them to be professionals. And, you know, there may be some validity that this trash can Mac works better in some context. If you work at Pixar, you don't really need that many hard drives locally on your desktop because you have this mega server farm in the basement or wherever the heck they hold it. And wow, those professionals, it works just great for them, would be the theory. And I think that's somewhat fallacious a concept in just the way it's set up. Because what it really kind of gets to is, hey, you know, either 1 terabyte of local storage is enough for you, or you need greater than 32 terabytes in a basement somewhere, and anything in between is not professional. And either 2 video cards that come on the trash can Mac are adequate for you, or you have a render farm, and nothing in between is professional. And, you know, either you work for Pixar, or, you know, we're not going to cater to the small independent freelance professionals, which was really always the mainstay. And I think when they were leaning on the creative professionals back in the day when they needed help, those were the folks, those independent freelancers were really probably the breadth of their user base that they leaned on. So it's kind of this weird thing where all the features that are lacking in the trash can Mac, like local storage that goes beyond 1 terabyte, upgradable video cards, and things that are not in there that a lot of professionals have griped about, apologists will say, well, you don't really need that to be a pro because if you worked at Pixar, you wouldn't need that, which is just, in my opinion, a really meek argument.
Hold on, Doug. Not many people have said that in my experience. The better argument is you don't need that because you can do breakout boxes, or because you can do network storage, or because you can do USB 3 drives, or because you can do RAIDs. That's the more common argument.
Well, except you can't do USB 3 drives on a Mac Pro.
Okay, that's a fine point that you make.
Just saying.
You can do Thunderbolt drives, and mm-hmm. I mean that's a better argument, but I still reject that.
So I think there's been a slew of arguments. I've been following a lot of arguments in some of the forums around, and so those were some of the ones that I heard that people have been arguing back and forth on. And sure, you can expand things with breakout boxes. Those fail in a number of ways too, because one of the nice things about the design, and don't get me wrong, I think the design is gorgeous. It's just like an aesthetic piece of art in the way that
it is.
Looks like a milled billet of just goodness, right? And in that sense, it's a great success. If you start putting ugly breakout boxes to hold the drives that you need that you didn't have room for internally, now you've got a big noisy fan. You've got an extra power supply that's being, just sucking juice down. And all of a sudden you need several of these things because, you know, 1 terabyte of SSD space for a pro isn't that much. You need a separate larger base of SSDs to work with. And then you need a mass storage, maybe RAID or array to get a lot of your video and photographs that you have backed up stored to it. So now there's a second box. And, heaven help you if you need more video processing power. The people on new Mac Pros live like animals. They get a PCI breakout box, and they put in big, powerful video cards, but those video cards are pumped through with this tiny little Thunderbolt pipe, and they're getting drips and drabs of the performance. It's just a wacky setup. So every goal that was, you would think, might be the design goal by Johnny Ive and company, in making such a beautiful, compact, standalone box has been perverted by all the things you need to add to this trash can Mac to make it serviceable for at least a good, fair number of professional users.
I want to expand on that a little bit, but first I want to revel in two great lines you said. First was the milled billet of goodness. Is that what you said?
Yes, I think so.
That's exactly what you said. A milled bullet of goodness.
Yeah. Oh, that's sexy. The second one is, of course, the idea that we're living like animals with our breakout boxes and whatnot. That killed me when I was editing your piece the first time. So that aside, I want to expand on this aspect of how this thing was designed, because I agree with you that the Mac Pro, I think everyone is going to agree that this thing is unbelievably attractive. And it's hilarious because it looks, even in some ways at least, cooler when you take the casing off of it.
It does. It really is neat.
I mean, it is a sexy piece of hardware, that is for sure. But the
motherboard looks like something M.C. Escher would have designed, which is so awesome.
Or something that would have been in the first Star Wars movie, and you know, with Obi-Wan Kenobi going, you know,
help turning, me, Obi-Wan. You're my only hope.
Turning a little handle thing there. Anyway,
it's gorgeous. Yes. It's a gorgeous piece of design. But then, so was the original cube, right?
Yes. But my problem with this gorgeous piece of design is that it is only gorgeous when it's not being used. You know, the vast majority of people would not have wires coming out of the back, all the cables that you're going to plug into it. And you've got to have a lot of stuff plugged into it because it doesn't have anything inside. Well, it obviously has some things inside. But, you know, as soon as you start doing the breakout boxes, as soon as you start doing the various Thunderbolt solutions and all that stuff, you are almost always going to have that gorgeous Apple logo pointed away from you, like the image that you included in the piece. So it looks gorgeous, but only when it's not being used. And I've got a fundamental problem with that. I've got a massive problem with the idea of having a pro machine, a machine aimed at creative professionals and scientists and video professionals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I've got a problem with this device being designed in such a way that it only looks great when it's not being used. That doesn't make any sense to me. It is the epitome of putting form over function.
So, of course, I agree with you, since I wrote the article. It shouldn't be too much of a surprise, but I'll play my own devil's advocate a little bit in some of the arguments I heard around it. And one of them is a very fair argument, which is, look, I think this one point is hard to agree with. There is no one typical type of pro user, and there is some subsection of pro users that just don't need a lot of local storage, who the video cards are pretty good for their needs, particularly if you're in the audio world. You know, you're not really doing too much 3D rendering or anything like that, or gaming or something like that. Network storage off somewhere, even remotely, is fast enough and good enough for them to move the audio back and forth. And so, for a good number of professionals, it's to quote Chris Rock, GED, good enough diploma, right, to get the job done. And it's a very fair argument, right? But just because it's good for one subsection, it doesn't mean of the pro market, doesn't mean it's good for everything. And the machine, when you think about pros are pretty, you know, in some sense, probably more diverse than anyone else, because you can be a pro in so many different under other industries, and you would think that the device would be somewhat more adaptable to those, to that diversity of professional needs. And it starts to fall down once you get outside of that small segment, for whom I have little doubt it's a fantastic machine. You start getting all those boxes that you need next to it. And then it fails at its own kind of design ethos at that point, because you just need so many other trinkets dangling off of it. And it looks ugly.
So, John, you hit on something that's been bouncing around in my head, which is that there's not one standardized creative professional. And that, to me, is where we have one of the biggest drawbacks in the Mac Pro. And that's the fact that it's not easily adaptable. So you can't create the machine that you need that's specific for your professional task. And that's what people typically need to do. They need to get the machine and then customize it with the right video cards or the right RAM or the right types and numbers of hard drives or whatever the expansion stuff that they need to add in to do their job is. Well, they need to fit that in. And with the Mac Pro, the machine is essentially the machine. And if you want more or different, then you don't have flexibility with the machine. You have to plug something in and work from the outside to get it as part of your system.
I think that's right, Jeff. And you know what's interesting is that you kind of get a lot of argument that goes to the absurd extreme, and I'm a big fan of arguing to the absurd extreme because I think it's educational oftentimes. But so to give you an example of what I mean there is, I've been pointing out that a bunch of folks that are leaving the Mac, and there were, you know, a lot of folks that weren't saying that they're leaving the Mac in an angry way. They weren't bitter. They were kind of very melancholy about it. They're going in a sad, you know, Dr. Seuss kind of novel. They're going away not wanting to have gone away. And but they have no choice. But some of the types of tools that they talk about are 36, 64 core machines that you can get now, Xeons, right? With half a gig, half a terabyte of RAM and enormous storage. And, you know, there's no way Apple is going to, even if it tries its best, and I don't think it's trying its best to service the pro market, but even if it were, there's no way it's going to make, you know, a range of professional gear that goes to such incredible extremes of, you know, hundreds of cores and whatnot. But the question is, do they get a reasonable sweet spot with a design? Does it serve enough of that diversity of cases to make a fair number happy and satisfied? And if you look at a device like the iPhone, it's also not the be-end-all device. There are people that want a 7-inch phone, and there are those available. There are people that want all kinds of crazy designs. They want some not so crazy. They want them to be, you know, to be submergible underwater, and probably all kinds of other cool dual screens. I've seen, you know, phones, and there's no way that Apple's going to make, you know, one device in particular, but even a full range that does everything for everybody. But the question is, did the design they come up with serve that sweet broad middle? And for the iPhone, they care enough to do that. And for the pro market, they just, it's either they don't care, or we're really misguided and we're really early with this design. Maybe this design, 5 years from now, 7 years from now, will make a lot more sense when, you know, solid state storage is, you know, a few orders of magnitude larger, memory is a few orders of magnitude larger, video card chips become chiclet size or something like that. And maybe it'll be great then. But right now, this is more of a Mac Mini Pro or a Mac Pro Mini than it is a real Mac Pro device to service that broad. And it's, I'm speaking relatively here when I say that broad spectrum of pro users is granted a pretty small niche these days itself. But this is serving a real sub micro portion of that already small niche.
I have a case study for you.
Okay.
I know a fellow, reasonably good looking. Perhaps he's stacked on a few pounds over the years. Lovely voice, he's told. And he is, as we speak, using a 2008 Mac Pro. The early 2008 Mac Pro, which will turn, 8 years in a month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
8 years old, that is. And this is the entry level 8-year-old Mac Pro. And the fascinating thing is that it's still quite serviceable. And the extra fascinating thing is that Apple will give this unknown person $117 for this device. And Gazelle will give him $233 for this device, meaning that I think it's probably worth $300 or $400 on the open market. Which is fascinating. I mean, that's like higher than the average selling price of a PC these days. And it's an 8-year-old device. And it's amazing that this thing still works. But one of the reasons why it works is because I've upgraded the video card. Oops, dead giveaway.
You upgraded the video card for right, your friend?
Right, I did it for a friend. Twice. Added a USB 3 card, right? Certainly changed out the hard drives multiple times. Multiple times. And have been able to do all these things in part because it does offer expansion that even the way I've used the expansion cards on this thing has not been to add functionality that was, you know, sort of extracurricular. It was to be able to add new technologies that had come out since that device was first released. And you can't do that with this Mac Pro. Well,
Brian, maybe that's part of the design. Maybe there are enough people that were buying the Pro machines that were holding on to them for 8 or 10 years between upgrades because they could replace so many components. And so it wasn't worth it for Apple to continue making a machine that you could crack open. And
you can't. The fly in that particular ointment, Jeff, is the fact that this machine is incredibly expensive to build, and they had to build a factory to do it. And they had to invent robots to do it. And they had to invent manufacturing processes to do it.
That's a good point.
So saying that they just weren't selling enough Mac of the towers to make it worthwhile to continue to making them at all, that doesn't hold.
Well, what if, and just because we're throwing flies at our ointment now, what if it's the factory was created to make the Mac Pro, but it's a test bed, and if it performs in the way they want or expect, or they find places they can improve it, make it work better, then eventually it becomes the template for, say, an iMac factory or an iPhone factory.
Well, okay, that actually kind of speaks to another point that John made in his piece, which is the idea that the Mac Pro is a halo product, that the benefits that Apple gets from having a high-end machine that is only needed by a small subset of Apple's overall customer base makes it worth producing in the first place. You know, if it's the case, do it right. I mean, you know, this piece is an homage not to performance but to design. And that's the problem with the Mac Pro. The Mac Pro should be an homage to performance first and then to design. You know, the Mac Pro towers were works of art compared to PC towers at the time, and even compared to the blue and whites. That came before it, the G4s and the G3s. Well, actually, the G4, was that the first metal one?
G5, I think.
What's that? The G5 was, you're right. No, yeah, the blue and white was the G3, and then the G4 was...
was the gray and white plastic.
Gray and white plastic, right.
But the very first cheese grater Mac...
It's a G5.
Are you sure it wasn't a dual core G4?
Yes.
Liquid cooled?
It was a G5. This form factor was introduced with the G5.
Okay. Well, it's been a long time. My memory's fuzzy.
Yeah. Please yell at us, readers. What are these? These are listeners?
These are the listeners.
But please yell at us, listeners, if we got that wrong.
Well, except for the one listener who actually pays someone to transcribe every show and then he reads it. That guy's actually still a reader.
Yeah. He's awesome, too, by the way.
Yes. Yeah.
Right, so it's this is a thought that is just coalescing for me for the first time. This device, the current Mac Pro is an homage to design before it's a homage to performance, and that's just wrong. It's just wrong, 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 wrong. And it's 2 years old. Oh my goodness, why do you sell a device aimed at the people who need the most performance of all the peoples? Why do you sell them two-and-a-half-year-old technology?
That's,
why?
That's a really good question. Okay, back when I was a consultant for the graphic arts and creative markets.
Hold on, let me consult my spreadsheet. That would be career number 42 for, right? Yeah, okay, 40.
Yes,
got it.
Yes. Okay, so I had clients that were routinely complaining about the fact that their computer was slow, or their Mac wasn't keeping up, and they were upset they couldn't run the latest version of Adobe Apps or whatever the software was that they needed to run. And they'd complain to me, and I'd say, well, the problem is you didn't buy a new Mac yet. And they wanted their computers to last 10 years in a professional environment. And I was telling them if they were going more than 2 years, that they were behind and their competition was leapfrogging them, and they just wouldn't be able to keep up. And so now here we have a Mac Pro that is 2.5 years old and has not been updated. What are the people that are buying this computer supposed to do? Their competition is buying new computers so that they can do their jobs faster and more efficiently, but they can't because they're stuck on a 2.5 year old Mac Pro.
Yeah, and unless they go to Linux or Windows,
yeah. And there's a lot of people, sadly, that are leaving the Mac camp and going and buying HP Z workstations because they can get a current processor that's really fast. They can get gobs of RAM and lots of hard drive space.
I want to be clear about something too. If I had myself a 2 year old, because again, you couldn't actually buy them when they were launched. If I had myself a 2 year old trash can Mac Pro, I would use it for a lot longer than 2 years. My complaint about Apple selling a 2.5 year old design is not because I want to be able to upgrade the one I've got. It's that I cannot stomach the idea of paying the same price for 2.5 year old technology as it was priced back then. I don't even want to buy the 2.5 year old technology, let alone paying the same price for it.
And it's completely uncompetitive to what's current in the market. If you look, I looked up, you can get a 36 core Xeon, which is clocked way, 36 core Xeon that's clocked way faster with five GPUs in it for, I think it was $5,900, which is a very middle of the road trash can Mac. But it's not even the top end trash can Mac, which, tops out around,
you're saying that price, would get you a middle of the road trash can Mac.
Right. Right. And so the performance is just obliterated. One thing that was pretty universally bemoaned by almost everyone on every side of the argument was, forgetting whether or not the form factor, the configuration of the Mac is a failure or not. And there's kind of, I took an informal poll in one of the Mac forum, the Mac Pro forum.
Over at Mac Rumors.
Yeah, over at Mac Rumors. Thanks. It's running about 60% think it's a failure, 40% think it's not. So a fair amount of discord, but then again, it's a very Mac-friendly place. So to get that much negativity about a Mac product is somewhat profound in and of itself. But one thing that almost everyone agreed with is whether or not the form factor is a success or not, waiting 2.5 years is not acceptable. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can go, if they made it a regular cycle and they made it every other year, like clockwork at least, maybe the pros could get used to that, so to speak.
That's offensive.
I agree.
That's absolutely offensive. And again, it's not just because I want to be able to replace my new Mac Pro every year, because that's, I mean, I've been using the same one since 2008. It's not that. It's just you can't ask professionals to buy.
I agree.
You cannot ask the people who absolutely have a need for the most performance they can get. You cannot ask those people to pay for two-year-old technology. And if you are, you better drop the price down. Like, you know, if Apple had like cut the price of the Mac Pro by, you know, 33% or 50%, it'd be kind of hard to complain about it.
So some of the apologies for why it's taking so long deal with various chipsets that aren't quite ready, that deal with Thunderbolt 3 and whatnot. And I guess the counter to that is, I don't care. That's not my problem. And moreover, I don't need to have the latest Thunderbolt 3 with the next iterative release. How about just give me a faster clock speed, give me some more cores, because hey, even beige box makers today can put out a 36-core Xeon. It's not that big a deal. So why can't the mighty Apple do it?
Apple could have updated. I have my problems with this form factor. But if Apple had done timely updates for the GPUs and the CPUs, we would be having a different discussion here.
I'm going to toss out a comment that I got on Twitter to the TMO Daily account, and because
that would be Daily Observations TDO.
Yes, and this is, I think, tying in directly to what you guys are saying right now. And this is from Marcus. And he says, very disappointed to hear another uninformed argument about how the new Mac Pro has been abandoned. 2 years has always been the update cycle. And he follows up by saying, why no update? The answer is simple. Thunderbolt 3, allowing for faster I/O and external 5K displays. No good update without it.
Well, except for the fact that that's not true. I guess he's got a point.
Well, the other point he has is my favorite kind of argument is the uninformed argument. There's nothing better in the world than some uninformed argument on my part. So that part is fine. It's very apologist. I mean, the fact that Apple now is the most valuable company in the world and can't find resources just to do a mediocre bump. I mean, they did a mediocre bump of the 15-inch MacBook, right? Because some of the chipsets weren't available there. But they went through the rigmarole to bump the clock speed a little bit, put on the new trackpad, right? Even though it's not a major bump. But, hey, it's fresh, and people feel like they're getting some value by getting the latest version. There's nothing stopping them from having done the same thing here in this can, other than they have no desire. And if you have to read it, and a lot of people in the forums agree, it's just a sign that Apple doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the previous update before the current cylinder trash can shape for the Mac Pro was an update that I think Apple should have been embarrassed about, because it was a processor update, and they didn't do it because they wanted to make a faster Mac Pro, although it was a little bit faster. They did it because the processor was so old, Intel stopped making it.
Which is telling. And, you know, there's two things that I want to take issue with Brian. And Jeff, I'm surprised you let this one go. You know, his first is being his claim of handsomeness. I'm surprised that just was allowed to go unchecked.
I think I said relatively, moderately even. There was a qualifier. I know I had some kind of qualifier in there.
And John, just so you know, I let those things build up. So Brian doesn't know when I'm going to hit him with the comebacks.
Fair enough. Anyway, go ahead, John, please.
Anyway, the second point, though, is the point of updating the Mac is not necessarily just to make it stretch out. And I agree with Jeff in that regard. And that was a fair argument that some people said that, hey, well, Apple doesn't make as much money and it doesn't make business sense to let you stretch out a Mac Pro for that. But I also have a 2010 Mac, and it's the only reason I don't have a trash can Mac is it's literally not sufficient. And my 2010 Mac is a faster machine in every single way possible than the trash can Mac. I have 3.46 gigahertz 12-core processors in there that are a little bit faster and some things a little bit slower, but basically awash with the top-end 12-core 2.7 gigahertz Xeons. I, however, have one 4-terabyte SSD there that you can't get for the trash can Mac. I have another one that does 6 gigabytes per second read and writes that you're not even going to get close to in that. I have video cards that drive 6 4K displays and that have, I don't know, 3-4 times the processing power.
Wait, hold on. Are you no longer running the 10 cinema displays?
I went down from 6 to 10. from 10 to 6, sorry.
This is true, by the way.
Like an animal.
Yeah, this is true. I want our listeners to understand this. John had, you know, back when this was cool, he had 10 displays. He was running from one Mac Pro.
It was actually 6 cinema displays, and then I have 4 65-inch screens. To stitch as a giant wall that
I was drawn on. My mistake. And you've gone from that to 6 4K displays.
Yeah. So like I said,
why do you even bother getting up in the morning?
That's a really good question.
You get used to a certain, amount of screen space, and yeah, it's been somewhat of a downgrade. I'm working on getting the other screens back. But anyway, the point though I was trying to make was, it's just a more powerful machine, period. I have USB 3 in there. I have the same Wi-Fi, AC, standard going on. So in just every way, it's actually performs better, which should be an embarrassment of major proportions to Apple that a 2010 Mac Pro is spanking their latest top end
with significant upgrades from USense.
True. That is true.
Let's be clear about that. Are the processors original?
No. Those are upgraded.
So you've upgraded the processors, you've upgraded the video cards, you've upgraded the hard drives, you've upgraded the networking, and you've upgraded the with some USB cards.
Well, somebody had to because Apple wasn't going to do it.
Right. I mean, this is actually further making the point, is you were able to do these things.
Right. And I really wanted to buy the new Mac Pro. It was insufficient even when it was brand new for me for the multiple screen reasons, which I'm not going to project and say that's the norm for Mac Pros, that they need 10.
Yeah, you're a little outside the bell curve on that. Just
right. That they need 10 yeah. screens. But the point, though, is that it was insufficient on a whole number of levels, even when it was brand new. And I did get I got a 12-core, 2.7 gigahertz very soon after it came out. I was fortunate enough to get in on that buy early, and it came in. But it just didn't cut the mustard, so one of my colleagues ended up benefiting from that machine. But the point, though, is it's not necessarily to make it to add longevity. It's to add the kind of might that a pro might need. Now, I have a weird need for a lot of screens, but other pros might have a weird need for a really fast storage array. And it's not that weird in the aggregate. Again, you got to service that sweet middle ground of the market sector that you're going for, in this case, pros. And the old machine had the flexibility to do that much better than the current one.
All right. So I have an email that I'm going to toss in here now, because this, I think, fits nicely with what you just said. And this one comes from William. And he's right now wondering what computer he's going to buy next. He has a 2008 Mac Pro. And he's actually using it as a personal computer and not a professional machine. But he needs to be able to process a lot of photos and videos. So what he's done, he added a second optical drive. He bumped up the memory to 18 gigs. He's using all four of the hard bay drives. He added FireWire 800 and eSATA to it. He's added USB 3 to it. And because of that, he's now running a couple Drobos off of it. And then he's added in SSDs a couple times along the way. And he says, if there's a port, I think I have something plugged into it. And he's stymied right now because he's ready to buy a new computer, but he has no idea what he can get because the current Mac Pro just it isn't the machine that he needs.
He could get a 2011 Mac Pro.
He could get a 2011 Mac Pro. Yeah.
It's funny, by the way, I have 18 gigs of RAM on my 2008 Mac Pro, like him. Although, anyway, the similarities in there. But what I did today was order a 5K iMac. First time I will be not using a tower as my desktop machine ever.
I guess congrats and condolences.
Well, John, I actually live like an animal with one cinema display. So, having a 5K
running water,
barely, but I have to go outside to get it. And, so, upgrading to a single 5K display is going to be obviously a fantasy dream come true, and using a lot less electricity, especially here in California, is going to be a lovely thing too. But you couldn't do with an iMac all the things that listener has done. You certainly couldn't do with an iMac everything that John has done.
No, that's true. But at least in your case, Brian, I'm thinking that the 5K iMac is going to be an awesome machine for you. Because what you need is that big, beautiful display in front of you and the horsepower to get your work done. And I think the iMac is actually going to do that really well for you.
Yeah, it'll be fine for me. I probably will end up having to replace it sooner than I replace this one simply because I won't be able to update with newer technologies. But
yes,
you know, woe is me.
Yeah.
I shan't complain about
that. That is one, you know, a lot of folks will say, hey, that's a great machine and there's no two ways about it. I think I saw some Barefeet's benchmarks that latest machine actually outperformed, I think it was the 6-core new Mac, Trashcan Mac Pro in most things anyway. So it's just going to show that the consumer side is outperforming in a lot of ways the supposedly pro side that's just been ignored.
Well, so you had a broader point.
Yeah. The other point though is even if you say that the Trashcan Mac supports a lot of, I guess professionals or enough professionals maybe to in some ways people's thinking, I can't imagine with a straight face, you know, hand on heart saying that, you know what, 1 terabyte of storage is more than anyone would ever need in a professional arena. It's a crazy, crazy small storage space for mass storage. It's fine for a boot drive, maybe, but if you're dealing with lots of photos and videos,
it is fine for a boot drive. Yeah. If you're going to have a boot drive and you're going to have separate storage, 1 terabyte's fine.
Yep.
The machine's incomplete for pros.
I know. Yeah, I guess, but I'm just quibbling with that particular statement. It is fine for a boot drive, but having just a boot drive in a pro machine is freaking ridiculous.
Yep.
All right. I'm going to toss another email out. And this one's from Lauren. And just so you know, he's not quite as happy as some people about the discussion. And he says, cheese grater, trash can, must we use such derogatory terms? How about tower and mini tower? And he goes on to say that he tends to think of them as old and new, and he doesn't have any problem with wires trailing off the back of the desk for all the external expansion. And he says, and if you really don't want to see that stuff, then just put the whole thing under your desk. And then he goes on to say, even more, he says, it's still more flexible than the iMac, and you're not as locked in to the stock specifications, and that we're still waiting for Intel to get serious again about their Xeon line.
So, again, other vendors have gotten very serious with 36-core Xeons. I'd say that's pretty deadly serious. The other thing I take issue with that is clearly a design goal of this beautiful work of art was to display it. So to put it under your desk is kind of like saying, hey, so I've got this unbelievable work of art from Michelangelo or something like that, and I'm going to put it in my closet.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Nobody should look at it.
It's too small.
It fails at its purpose.
It's actually too small to have underneath your desk because you're going to kick it, you're going to knock it over.
So
it doesn't have a good base. Sitting on a carpet, for instance.
So I think that's a kind of a weak argument. The other arguments are very fair that it is, there's a little doubt in my mind that it is more flexible in some sense, just by nature of not having a screen slapped onto it than an iMac, because you could have at least a diversity of screens on there. So, yep, good point. But again, does that serve a good sweet center of the professional market, or does it serve a particularly too small of a niche portion of that market? And my feeling is on this, and you know, at least 60% of some of the Mac Pro forums feel that it's probably failing at addressing the market as broadly as it should. And maybe this is something that Apple needs to rethink. You know, put in at least room for at least one mass storage device, or put in a few extra SSD slots in there from 1 to 4. You could easily fit that in on an updated design. Make the video cards. You kind of have cards in there as well, but make them somehow hooked up to a connector that you might be able to upgrade those to something even more powerful. Those were very powerful video cards at the time, but right now they're pretty anemic, and you can get a really cheap video card that will trounce those cards. And again, Apple isn't updating them, so maybe some third party would. At least during those kind of dry times when Apple ignores this, which gets to, I guess, another broad point of why is Apple, it really does seem like Apple's run by like 15 people and they all get too tired doing the latest update of whatever it is they updated, and then huge swaths of the product line get ignored. And the pro market is probably the most ignored. But there are other areas where you scratch your head for a bit and say, you know, that there's a lot of capacity there, and you wonder why there isn't a little bit more bandwidth shown on refreshing these things that should just be really kind of mundane refreshes. There would have been no big deal to just update the Xeon processors in this. You don't have to do a major chipset update every time. You don't have to have a Thunderbolt, you know, 10 update every time you release something. It's okay to release that 15-inch MacBook Pro with just a small, you know, bump in features on the trackpad, and more bandwidth and speed on the solid-state drive. That really was all that happened in the last MacBook Pro update. So those are fine. Keep it fresh, at least to that degree.
Okay, so several things there. First of all, can you imagine if Apple had released this Mac Pro design that was, say, twice as big, but included, say, slots for expensive SSDs that, of course, you know, third parties could actually compete with, right? And actually had the ability to change the video cards, as you just said, maybe even had the ability to change CPUs, maybe. I mean, that may be asking too much there. If the Mac Pro was twice as big as it is, if it was three times as big as it is, it would still be a gorgeous and wondrous piece of art. And people Agreed. Would have oohed and aahed over it. 50% bigger. I mean, it's like it didn't need to be so small that they had to sacrifice all this functionality.
Yeah, you know, some things, you know, I always fear when people don't learn from history, because I think it was kind of the same rap on the old Cube, which was, if they just positioned this device to be in a different segment than it was, it could have been very successful. The rap on the old Cube, for those that are old enough to remember, was it was just too expensive, and if you made it kind of a slightly more expensive version of the entry models, it might have done better. And this positioned as, again, a Mac Pro Mini or a Mac Mini Pro would have done fantastic. And everybody would have been thrilled. And I think a lot of times it's such a gorgeous piece that people start confusing their lust for it with how great it is to actually use for a particular segment. And it's and I understand. I look at it and I lust for it too, but it just didn't get the job done for what I needed. And again, I'm not the demographic to go by, but I think that's the case for a lot of folks that have complained as well. But I wish I had something to disagree with you on, Brian, but yeah, I agree. If they made it double the size, it would have been still a really tidy package, and you could have fit a lot more flexibility into that design. And I think they would have sold a good number more than they had, although I'm just speculating there because I don't think they really released the numbers for the Mac Pro on the units sold.
No, they don't. They lump all Mac sales into a single number. So, John, I have a question for you, John. And sure. This is the same question that I asked on Daily Observations yesterday. Do you think Apple is going to release an updated Mac Pro at any point?
I do. I'm going with the flow here. Everyone believes that there's a chipset that's waiting on Thunderbolt 3, and then once that chipset is ready, that they'll release that. And it's kind of a floodgate release, right? Because that chipset will also have kind of the enhanced video to allow for 5K video across the Thunderbolt ports. And that's the one everyone's waiting for. So it seems like there's a lot of pressure for that to occur. And there's a lot of rhyme and reason why that might be why they're holding up for so long. So one would hope. If I had a bet that it will happen, I'm not sure exactly. I think I heard rumors that it's in first to second quarter of 2016 when that when those parts become available. So I guess we'll see.
Yeah, you also mentioned, by the way, the size of the management team, and it seems like maybe they're stretched too thin. You didn't put it that way, but that's essentially what you're saying. And I think that's probably a direct reflection on Steve Jobs' penchant to always run lean, to always run like a startup, to not have a bloated executive staff. The problem is, I think that Apple is getting too big to not grow its executive team and to not have more people in that sort of inner decision-making circle.
So that may well be right. And the other thing, I think that you don't necessarily have to solve all the big problems in the world, and that may be a real big problem as they stretch into supposedly really diverse areas like the car and whatnot, if that ever actually happens. But they need artificial intelligence expertise for Siri to get better and whatnot. But you don't have to solve all those problems in the world. Some of these can be stupid, just iterative updates that everyone is thrilled with, right? Just give us a speed bump. Put your B team on it to just do the speed bump. Give us that. We're happy for it. Every release doesn't have to be a revolution that melts our brains, right? And realistically, it won't be. So to set that standard that would require kind of that high-level management decision of, do we really go with this trash can looking thing instead of our old case? Yeah, that probably does require a lot of input from management versus, let's bump this up from 2.7 gigahertz to 3.1 gigahertz. How about that? How about we just start with some easy problem like that? Yeah, I don't think it takes all that much input to manage that. And they could probably stretch the management team a little bit if some of that ethos is in there. So I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just a part of the growing pains as the company gets bigger and they have to figure some of that out. But it's somewhat baffling to me that they do the hard stuff really well and the easy stuff not as well sometimes.
All right. Well, one more thing about Lauren. We're going to end up having to go here. But one more thing that Lauren said, to me, cheese grater and trash can, those are terms of endearment.
Yes, I agree. I don't see those as negative terms.
Or derogatory or insulting or, you know, in any way whatsoever. And I certainly use them as terms of endearment.
So yes. And actually I'm looking forward to the day when Apple can pack everything we could possibly imagine into a computer that's a very small cylinder, and then we'll have the shot glass.
It's true. All right, we have a little bit of self-promotion to do because we're so good at that.
Yeah, we're so good at that. So what should we promote, Brian?
Let's tell people about the Twitter account that we launched a month ago.
that would be Context Machine on Twitter.
That's it. There you go.
Well, the thing is, I was going to tell everyone that we just launched it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there we go.
So go ahead and rewind and edit your part out, and we'll say, hey, everyone, you should go and check out the Twitter account we just launched. It's called Context Machine.
Yeah, so twitter.com/Context Machine or @Context Machine. And what are we going to put on there?
Well, we can have anything? Conversations about the show. We can let people know when new episodes are up.
People can yell at us for saying that normal users suck.
People can yell at Brian for saying
normal users suck. No, that was our guest that said that. That was our guest that said
that's
that.
That's right. People can yell at John.
Right. People can yell at John. And we would very much like you to follow us there feel free to drop us notes. Of course, I'm at Team O'Brien. It's Brian with a Y.
And I am Jay Gamut. There's no Y's in that.
And the show itself is at Context Machine, all on Twitter. And John, do you have any social media that you'd like to promote?
No, but I was just thinking about
I understand.
People being people being mad at my characterization of consumers not being kind of motivating. I could just think of the Think Different ad, right? And this emotional pan and zoom and the kind of camera roll into a person waiting online. And it's like, yeah, that's what I, right along with middle management, that's what I hope to be when I grow up a consumer. It'd be awesome.
All right. And our last three listeners are gone. Thanks, John.
Hey, the interns, they even turned and walked away. Man, that's harsh.
Yeah, that is harsh. That is harsh. But John, thank you very much for being on. It was a great discussion. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. Yeah, enjoyed myself.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Awesome to have you here.
Thanks, Jeff.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Or, hey, you could even use that new Twitter account, Context Machine.
And you can still use that new Twitter account at Context Machine. Also, John Keat used to work at Next. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly, the bass is by Boom Recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And those of you that are still left, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.